Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. Across Native America and in thousands of lakes and rivers are bass, trout, salmon, and catfish that are ripe for the picking. Now that the weather's warming up and summer vacations are drawing near, for many, it's time to go fishing. Today, we'll hear about how important fishing is to you in your Native community. We are back with fishing right after the news. Stay with us.
For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons, in for Antonia Gonzalez. A Washington Post survey on the use of an offensive term for a sports team prompted a strong backlash from Native American leaders, organizations, publications, and on social media. The survey maintains 90% of Native Americans do not object to the name of the Washington, D.C. NFL team. The National Congress for American Indians issued a written statement saying, quote, "Thousands of Native American people across the country have voiced their opposition to the name and the historic disparaging connotations it carries to this day." Minnesota Congresswoman Betty McCollum, co-chair of the Congressional Native American Caucus, says, quote, "The vast majority of Americans would never dream of calling Native American the R-word." Amanda Blackhorse says the survey has no bearing on the lawsuit she and a handful of others filed to end the trademark protection against the name. The suit is now 10 years old. Blackhorse says the issue remains about what is morally right and not about public opinion.
We should never use a poll to get public opinion about a civil and human rights issue, because that's really what this is about. Mascots and stereotypes of Native people dehumanize Native people. So this is a human rights issue, and we should never use polls to measure where we are at with that in our society. It's just completely absurd.
Black Horse admits supporters of the name change have a ways to go to inform others about the issue.
What it really comes down to is education of our people. Are we receiving the education about this? Are we being given the opportunity to be educated on this? Are we teaching this in our schools? Are we teaching our children?
The Post survey indicates more than half, 56% of those asked, had heard little or nothing at all about the team name controversy. The newspaper says 44% of those participating in the survey are enrolled members of a tribe. The rest are non-enrolled, self-identified Native Americans. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders scheduled a meeting with Native American leaders in New Mexico ahead of two political rallies there. The meetings continue Sanders' attention to Native American issues as the senator battles Hillary Clinton for his party's nomination. Sanders is coming off a swing through South Dakota, where he spoke generally about Native American issues in Pine Ridge and Rapid City. Sanders mentioned poverty, inadequate health care, and high unemployment during his rallies there. He says the federal government needs to fundamentally change its relationships with Native Americans. His appearance in New Mexico precedes rallies by former President Bill Clinton on behalf of his wife and Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. The state's primary election is June 7th. Reporters will be allowed at the New Mexico State GOP convention this weekend. Officials from Sandia Pueblo reversed the initial stance that the media would be barred from the event held at the Sandia Resort and Casino. The Albuquerque Journal reports state Republican leaders were surprised this week by the original policy to ban reporters, but couldn't change venues on such short notice. The Sandia Tribal Council voted Wednesday to allow members of the media for the convention. Oglala Sioux President John Yellowbird Steele says he does not expect the issue of legalizing alcohol sales on the Pine Ridge Reservation to come up again before the end of the year. He made his comments to the Rapid City Journal after the Tribal Council canceled a referendum on the issue. The action came on the eve of a vote by tribal members. The referendum would have allowed the Tribal Council to oversee licensing of alcohol sales and distribution on reservation land. The search continues for three men last seen almost 2 weeks ago on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Hundreds of volunteers have contributed to the search for Juan Lamont, Tevin Tyon, and Terrell Wilson, all in their 20s. Authorities say they went missing sometime after May 7th. They're reportedly in a 2006 Buick LaCrosse. Another man, 24-year-old Alejandro Tank Vasquez, went missing on the Pine Ridge Reservation last fall. In addition to community members and law enforcement officials, the South Dakota Civil Air Patrol and the BIA firefighters have helped out in the search. For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. Throwing a lure into the lake and waiting for a fish to bite is a thrill for people who love to fish. Relaxing by the water, taking in the fresh air, is also a way to connect with nature. And when the fish bites, the connection becomes literal. You get a rush of adrenaline as you reel the fish in. Then it's either thrown back into the water or saved for dinner. It's fishing season, and many of us are gearing up for a trip down to the lake or river. We've invited several expert Native anglers on our program today to tell us their fishing stories and share some advice. And you're welcome to join the conversation, too. Tell us about your biggest catch, your favorite spot, and what fishing means to your Native community. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Don't be shy. Call us with your fish stories. We want to hear them. 1-800-996-2848. Joining us now from the Quinault Nation in Washington is Rich Underwood. He is a fishing guide for the Lower Quinault Outfitter, and he is a Quinault tribal member. Welcome to Native America Calling, Rich.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you. Pleasure to be on the air.
It's great to have you. Okay, tell us about the fish on Quinault Nation. What kind of fish do you fish for?
Well, here up in Quinault in the Olympic Peninsula, we have an array of fish: salmon, steelhead, trout, sea run, dollies. We even fish in the ocean for perch and bottom fish and salmon as well. So we've got a vast numbers of fish that we go after. We can fish year-round practically.
So there's no real fishing season to start for you guys?
No. Not really. Well, we do have seasons, you know, depending on species that we're going to target. Like right now, we're kind of transitioning from our winter steelhead fishing into our spring, summer trout, dollies, and summer run steelhead fishing right now. So,
Rich,
yeah, kind of got a combination of fisheries going on here.
Hmm. Rich, what is your favorite fish to catch?
I think the favorite among all the species has to be the winter run steelhead for me.
And why is that?
Well, the winter run steelhead is quite a challenge. You know, the salmon, don't get me wrong, they're a good fishery as well to participate in, but they're a little bit easier to catch than a winter run steelhead. Besides, you have the weather you have to deal with. You know, here you got rainy conditions up here in a rainforest. So you got to battle the elements. Sometimes it's cold and kind of miserable, but those kind of separate the real fishermen from the fishermen, I guess. You have to be a whole different breed of animal to be fishing these for the winter on steelhead, that's for sure.
What do they look like? Are they the ones with the gnarly like hook underneath them? Like their mouth is kind of hook-shaped? Or have I got them confused with another one?
No, that one's a different one. That one's probably either your chum salmon or your coho salmon, hook nose coho, or the ones with the teeth. Those are your chum salmon. We call them dogfish for that reason. But the winter on steelhead is basically a trout, enlarged trout. It's like a trout on steroids. Here is the way we manage our system here. We have a strain of winter on steelhead that we've been able to preserve here in the Lower Quinault, and And this fish can reach upwards to 30 to 35 pounds.
Wow. That's a pretty big fish. Is it difficult
Yes.
to reel something like that in? I mean, do you have to spend a lot of time sort of pulling and waiting and things like that?
Yes, it depends. A lot of the times we're in a vessel, jet boat, and that allows us to follow the fish if necessary. But really, the fight is between you and the fish, and I always recommend to keep your line taut. That way you don't have any slack to where that steelhead can spit out your hook or whatever you're using. Generally what we're using is corky and yarn with a little bit of pencil lead. Some people like to use floats and bait or floats and jigs to go after this steelhead. So my recommendation's always been just to keep your line taut. That way you got control of the fish, or vice versa. In some cases, that fish may have control of you.
We're talking about fishing today, and we want to hear from you. What was the biggest fish that you ever caught? Today is your opportunity to call in and tell Native America your biggest fish story. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Rich Underwood is with us. He's from the Lower Quinault Outfitter. And if you've got fishing questions, you can also call in and ask those. Again, 1-800-996-2848. Rich, tell us a little bit about what you do as a guide.
Well, being a guide and slash outfitter, I provide all the gear. The days usually start quite early. Meet up with the clients, and what we'll do is we'll get off the gravel bar and get into the jet sled and go after our fish right about daylight. And a lot of the clients that I do get are seasoned fishermen, anglers, and some are not so equipped, but they're willing to learn, and that it's my responsibility to kind of guide them through this process, teach them the nuances of actual fishing, so they have that confidence. Each cast that they make, they have the confidence that they're gonna catch on to a nice winner on steelhead.
Do you get folks that are a little bit maybe squeamish about fishing? I this past summer, I went home to Montana to visit, and my father took me fishing. And I hadn't been in so long, and I caught this catfish, and we had to throw it back. It was too small, but my dad spent a tremendous amount of time trying to get the hook out of the catfish's mouth, and the catfish was making this weird noise, like, and I just stood there, like, in horror, like, what is happening? Am I going to kill this fish? This is horrible, and needless to say, my dad was very disappointed. Everything he had taught me about fishing had gone away entirely. How do you handle squeamish people like that?
Well, you just got to kind of sit back and chuckle, but, you always try to help out when you can, of course, but to overcome that, it's best just to leave that individual to deal with. One of the things, that I get, it's not necessarily the fish that they're squirmish about, but it's the type of bait. In this particular fishery, we use bait. We use salmon roe. Dyed and cured in our special cures, of course. But we also have what they call a sand shrimp that we get off our beach down here. And it's kind of like a little crawfish, if you will, in some areas. But ours is particular. It's called a sand shrimp, and it has claws, and it squirms around a lot. And I'll get some clients that just will not touch one of those. So I have to kind of coaxed them to, well, it's okay, it ain't going to hurt you. But, just to get over that initial shock of opening the styrofoam lid off that container and seeing something squirm around. I had one client, which was a female, opened up the lid on the container, seen these things squirm around, and dropped the whole container in the bottom of my boat and screamed.
Oh, no.
And I thought maybe she hooked herself because I was turning away doing some other things. But Yeah, I had to get a laugh out of that one. But at the end of the, towards the end of the day, she was confident. She was comfortable picking us up and baiting her own hook. So, yeah, just a little coaxing. But, yeah, you do get a little laugh every now and again.
So are you firmly on the stance that if you can't bait your own hook, you shouldn't be going fishing?
Yeah, you know, you try to stand firm on that, but in some cases you just can't help it. If you got a 12, 13-year-old kid that continuously tries to bait his own hook but it isn't quite picking up how you're explaining to him, there's certain ways you need to bait the hook in order for that bait to stay on. And so you need to maximize that time you're using that bait in the water, because eventually it's going to fall off. In some cases, like the young 10 to 12-year-old kid that has never used bait before is trying, you teach them, and they make their cast, and their bait flies off. And so they're fishing basically with no bait, and the chances of catching a fish with no bait are pretty slim. So you try to make that trip enjoyable for whoever it is, whether it's a young child or a inexperienced fisherman. But at the end, they should know by then how to bait their own hooks.
Well, what about you? Can you bait your own hook? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. We're talking about fishing today, and we'd love to hear your fishing stories, your favorite fishing spots, or anything that you're thinking about in terms of fishing. Where are you planning on going fishing this summer? 1-800-996-2848. I'd also like to give a special shout out to the lady anglers listening in today. Are you a fish? Call us and share your fishing experience. How did you get into it? And how long have you been fishing? Again, the number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Rich, why is Quinault a good fishing spot?
Well, the Quinault has been known throughout the world, basically, and, you know, for as long as I can remember when I got into it back in 1984, you know, people revered the Quinault River for the large winter on steelhead and how we managed our population here and our fisheries, how we managed everything. So that's been the lure. You know, every angler that I know of always wants to catch the biggest fish. You know, the little ones, they're okay, but the large fish, that's what we're talking about, and that's what the lure is. People want to find that. A lot of it now, for the lower Quinault and the Quinault in general, is the fact that, you know, anywhere you go in the lower 48 now, into these streams, creeks, rivers, lakes, you tend to find a lot of people. And because this is such a popular recreational sport, you're going to find a lot of people crowded in these little areas. And sometimes people can't, they don't agree with that. And so what they want to do is try to find areas where it's not so crowded, away from people, chance to catch a big fish. So the lower Quinault is private. What I mean by private, we have 35 miles here on the lower Quinault that's just accessible. Only accessible by a tribal guide. So it's not open to the public. And so that's kind of the lure here for the lower Quinault. And people know about this, so that's what they really like now. They enjoy the tranquility away from the big crowds. You know, you don't have trains going by. You don't have structure along the riverbank, houses, buildings. You don't have traffic. It's been this way since I can remember. So it's undeveloped, still as wild and scenic as it was 1,000 years ago.
That sounds really beautiful. Do you go fishing just for fun for yourself, you know, even though it's your job?
Yes, I do. You know, and I'm glad that you asked that because, you know, at times, you know, it can be a stressful job. Things happen, motor breaks down, your motor's not working right, your trailer, you just got a flat tire. Maybe everyday life, the monotony of everyday life is kind of getting you down. So you need a reprieve. And what better way to spend it is to spend it on a river with nobody around, with just you and the river, Mother Nature, as it was intended to be. You've got the eagles singing up in the trees. You've got elk crossing in the lower rivers below you, or you got deer and bear, you know, as you're drifting by. So it puts things back into perspective, you know, for me especially, because every once in a while you need that kind of a recharge in life. So that's the way I like to spend my time.
Absolutely. We are celebrating the art and sport of fishing today. Do you have a fishing story that never gets old? Call in and tell us about your biggest catch. The number to join in is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We recorded a short fishing story from Vera Murphy, who is from the Navajo Nation. Vera is our associate producer, Andy Murphy's great aunt.
There's a nearby lake, I would say maybe about 30 miles south from where I live. And a while back, I used to see a lot of water. I mean, the level was high. And there's this fisher, a guy fishing. He was my brother-in-law. And I watched him. After a while, he was frustrated. I guess he decided to just quit. But I was sitting there watching him, and I was eating popcorn. And I said, "Hey, Harry, maybe you ought to try some popcorn." So he says, "Well, give me some. Let me try it." So I gave him some popcorn. Well, he used that as a bait. So then he threw his line in again, and, you know, not even a minute. Within seconds, he started to feel something pulling on his fishing line, and he started to reel it in. Guess what? He had a big trout. No, this trout was just wiggled and wiggled, and finally he got it up to where he was, and he took it off. And, you know, he was so amazed. He was excited. He got this big old trout, and the popcorn did work.
That was Vera Murphy sharing with us her fish story. Do you have a similar story? What kind of bait do you like to use? What is the perfect bait to catch that big fish? Give us a call and let us know. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Let's add another voice to the conversation. Joining us from Wheatfield Lake, Arizona is LaVon Thomas. He is the owner of the Wheatfield Lakeside Store, and he is Dene. Hey, LaVon.
Good morning.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. So, LaVon, do you have a fish story for us today? Something about the big one that got away, maybe, or the one that you got to keep?
Oh, well, there are so many, but the one that catches me a lot is, you know, the first-timers. Most of the big fish out here, in Wheatfields Lake, I get a lot of first-timers. The parents come out and want to learn how to get their child, and most of them are single women, and they want to get their kids to learn how to fish. But this one here is, he's probably about 7 years old, and his father's a fly fisherman, so his father was fly fishing, and the little boy, his parents had baited up and put the hook on, and he was getting upset because he wanted to be in action like his father, you know, where you're constantly casting your line and then presenting your fly to the fish on top of the lake, and he wanted to assimilate his dad. So, you know, you have a lot of these, Marvel comic character fishing poles, and this one was a Spider-Man, and he was getting frustrated because he couldn't copy his dad, so they end up rigging up probably about 12 feet, and he was all excited where he was casting to get his fly out into the lake, and he had a black woolly booger, and he sat it on there, and I guess, you know, him simulating his dad, his arm got tired. So he ended up dropping the fly in the lake, and man, behold, man, he got the biggest fish this year so far. And we couldn't believe that, you know, these toys that they sell They're real fishing poles. And then he brought in a 22-inch, near a 3-pound fish.
Wow.
So, and it's the first fish that he caught.
LaVon, I wonder if folks who, hearing that story, I wonder if like the idea, you know, you spend all this money on the perfect lure, the perfect fishing pole, and then the young one is catching it with just the Spider-Man pole, if you're feeling a little salty about that.
I get a lot of those. There's even some other kids like, okay, last year's power bait. Okay, they use a lot of power bait lures, and there's a lot of fly fishing that happens here. But a lot of the kids get what was left over from last year, and they just mix it all together and make a goulash, and then that's what the kids get. And the parents come in and buy fresh bait, you know. And usually they're the ones that catch the big one. And then I get a lot of just sportsmen that come out here mainly in the fall before the rain and the snow comes. And that's the perfect time. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't be out here, but these guys are all ready with. And I get a lot of female fishermen, and they're all geared up for this because that's when most of the action, you get the 27, 25-inch fish, you know, 7-8-pound trout. And a lot of them are just here for the sport. They like to fight. And then they thank the fish for give them that energy, and a lot of them put them back. And reasons why is those are the elderly fish. And in here on the nation, the main thing my people eat is mutton, sheep. So they simulate things like that. They're saying that, you know, these bigger fish, they taste like the old sheep. They want to catch, you know, a lot of people like lamb meat, so they want the younger fish. So that's a lot of them let the old ones go.
Do you hook do you fish with the barbed hooks or the non-barbed hooks to in order to put them back?
There's no restriction. You can use barbed hooks here, but a lot of the fly fishermen are barbless because a lot of them let them go. They're just out here for the energy, the sport, the feeling of the high, I guess. And most of the, I get people from pretty much everywhere. It's a 300-acre lake. The lake is formed all off the runoff from the mountain.
And, you know, sorry, LaVon, we are just about to go to a break. I want to hear more about what Wheatfield Lake looks like. But we are talking about fishing today, and we want to hear from you. Call us with your fish stories. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Where is your favorite spot to go fishing? Call us right now. The phone lines are open for you to share your story.
I'm Tara Gatewood, host of Native America Calling. Have you ever considered yourself an indigenous superhero? Captain Paiute didn't either until duty called. This month, we'll dive into the adventure of Captain Paiute, indigenous defender of the Southwest, by Paiute illustrator and comic creator Theo So. We hope you can join us.
Oh, Support by the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, and the New Mexico Museum of Art, presenting a year-long centennial celebration of seminal Native American artist Lloyd Kivenu. Finding a Contemporary Voice, the Legacy of Lloyd Kivenu and IAIA, includes work by IAIA faculty and alumni from the 1960s to the present, such as Fritz Scholder, Neil Parsons, T.C. Cannon, Melanie Yazzie, and Will Wilson. Info at nmculture.org/LKN.
Welcome back. You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. Today, we're celebrating the art and sport of fishing. Are you planning a fishing trip this summer? Where is your favorite spot to fish? Now that the weather's warming up, many of us are going to head out to the lake. If you're a seasoned angler, what advice do you have about being responsible with the fish that we catch? And how many fish is too many? You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can also join our conversation on social media. We are on Facebook, and our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Share with us some of those fish photos. We'd love to see them. We've got Rich Underwood. He is a fishing guide from the Lower Quinault Outfitter, and he is a Quinault tribal member. And also, we're talking with LaVon Thomas. He is the owner of the Wheatfield Lakeside Store, and he is Dene. LaVon, before the break, you were sharing with us a little bit about what Wheatfield Lake looks like.
Yeah, we're about 2 miles from the Arizona-New Mexico border. We're up in the Chaska, the base of the Chaska Mountains. We're about 7,200 feet. And then here on Navajo, there's 17 lakes, but most of them are real low on water, but there's 10 that have fish. And then there's 7 of them that they stocked this year, and we have species of trout is probably the main one. And then we have small and bigmouth bass and also catfish. And these lakes extend right on the between Arizona and New Mexico. So I believe there's 5 lakes in New Mexico, 5 lakes in Arizona that are stocked. So most of the fish that we get, we have our own tribal hatchery, and they stock the lakes. And then that'll be mainly rainbow trout. And then all the catfish they import to stock them. But like I say, it's fishing season for my activity at the lake. Is there's 24-hour fishing here, and 12 months of the year. There in the summer is the most amount of activity, but all winter people come out here to ice fish. And then most of the fishing season will start right as soon as they let the kids out of school, which will be next week. And then we go up till the freeze. And like I say, I get a lot of anglers here, like during hunting season. Everybody's out here hunting, and then most of the buck, the elk, are they usually hunt for them in the morning. Then the day they take a break, go fishing, and then they try to continue on before sundown. Also the turkey hunt.
So you are gearing up for a pretty, pretty big influx of folks coming. We are talking about fishing today. If you've got something you'd like to share, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. I want to hear your biggest fish stories. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to the phones. We've got Gregory in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Hey there, Gregory. What would you like to share?
Okay. A terrible fishing story.
You got a terrible one for us?
Oh, yeah. I live here in the Kuskokwim River. And the family that came out of the mouth of the St. Lawrence there, the husband there is, he liked to boast there about casting a fly in a spin cast. And they'd always there, brag. So I took him out. And he brought along his number size 6 spoon red devil. And I took him to this little hidey hole. You know, he's been casting, and lo and behold, whoop, I got one. Ooh, yeah, I look like a good one. After reeling it in there, it was just a little 8-inch there on a 6, on a number size 6 hook.
So you caught a tiny little fish on a big old hook. That's pretty funny, Gregory. Thanks for giving us a call from Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Let's talk to Andrew in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Andrew.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. You got a fish story for us?
I do. My name's Andrew, like she said, from Albuquerque, and I wanted to say a shout-out to my brother, Eddie Begay, up in Four Corners. And I haven't been fishing with him so long, so if he's listening, call me in Albuquerque and let's go fishing. But anyway, I fished with him. My little childhood memories were he and I fishing at Elvado Lake in the snow, and we were catching nothing but carp all day long. And we'd catch those carp, and we'd throw them on the fire and cook them up and eat them. And then the last time I went fishing, that was just a great childhood memory. It was so cold and snow everywhere, and we were just catching carp, and they're good eating. You just throw them on the fire and cook them right up. But then last time I went with him was up at San Juan, and that guy can fish. He was catching fish like crazy, and I wasn't catching anything. And I went over to one of the big rocks and had my old bamboo rod, and I tied a pistol peat, which is a little booger with a propeller on it. And I threw it in, and I hooked the biggest brown you'd ever seen. And my rod is old bamboo from 1952, and I thought it was going to break. It was just bent so far. But I finally got that fish in and waded back across the river and showed it to Eddie. And, of course, we started a fire, and we cooked it up. So that's my story, and once again, I just wanted to say hey to Eddie and his son Adam. If you guys are listening, give me a ring, and let's go fishing.
All right, Andrew, thanks so much for giving us the call from Albuquerque. Tuned in on KUNM. If you've got a fish story, there's still time in the hour. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Rich, now twice I've heard people refer to a booger, and I got to ask, what is that?
A woolly booger?
Yeah, what is that?
A woolly booger is kind of a, it's a fly is what it is, and it emulates a food for that is kind of a leech pattern. What they refer to as a woolly booger usually has a little tungsten head that sinks, and they're black with a little bit of a speckle, maybe, perhaps, with a tail. And it, what it is, it's a more natural-looking food presentation for the species of fish that you're targeting, such as trout. So that's kind of what the separation is between a woolly bugger and a spinner, or a what they call a spoon. So there's variations of tactics that you use. In this case, what they were referring to as a woolly bugger generally are attached to a fly rod.
I
not
see.
Not so much a terminal gear.
And Rich, another thing our caller Andrew brought up is that they caught a lot of carp, and that they were good eating. You can just throw them on the fire. I know that carp are not that popular here in the U.S. And that in some cases they're in sort of turning into an invasive species. Do you have an issue with carp where you're from?
You know, not here, not up here in the Olympic Peninsula. I'm up here in Washington State, right on the ocean, a little village called Tohola, and we also have a northern village, Queets. We don't get the carp here up here in the peninsula, so that's really not an issue. One of the things that we're concerned with, perhaps, is maybe the what they call a pink salmon. Them things come back in millions, and you know what they do is they tend to take over spawning habitat for our natural wild fish, whether they're steelhead salmon. So that's one of the concerns we have up here. But the carp, we don't have too many of those here.
What about you, Levon? Is carp a concern in Wheatfield Lake?
No, there's no carp here. It's all along the rivers, like what a gentleman called earlier about his friends to get him a call. That's the San Juan River. That's where I hear of the carp. And then also on the other end of the Navajo Nation, which is the little Colorado that leads into the Grand Canyon. They have it down down in there. That's where, but not around here. The only thing is, like, there was a lake 10 miles from Wheatfield, and somebody got tired of their goldfish and threw them in there and ruined the whole lake. So they had to drain it, and now they, at the same time, they refilled it. Now it's all cleaned out and ready to be filled and restocked.
So your advice, don't be throwing your goldfish into the
lakes. Yes, don't get rid of, I mean, man, they'll multiply and they'll take over the lake.
We're talking about fishing today. There is still time to get in on the conversation. The number is 1-800-996-2848. I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation. Joining us from Kenai, Alaska is Alexandra Lindgren. She is Denaina from the Kenaitse Indian tribe, and she is a tribal elder and a cultural bearer. Welcome to Native America Calling. And I understand that you go by Sasha.
Yes, uh-huh.
All right, Sasha, so tell us a little bit about fishing on the Kenai Peninsula.
Well, we have some of the biggest fish. We have king salmon that have gone over 90 pounds. But my fishing is at our tribal fishery, which is the set net. And I love doing that. But I've also caught my first sport fishing story was a 74-pound halibut out of Homer, Alaska.
Whoa.
And he hooked me. I love to go halibut fishing. But when we go down to our tribal net and we set it, it's the connections between family and the resource. We need fish. We need salmon. Not only physically for nutritional value, but also it's almost like a spiritual connection, and it connects generations because the last time I was at the net, I had great-grandchildren with me. So there was four generations fishing the net. And I think that of all the experiences we can give our children, whether it's what people term subsistence fishing or sports fishing, if we're respectful of the resource and we're building relationships with people, fishing is probably one of the best activities we can share. And it all doesn't always have to cost a whole bunch of money to do it.
Absolutely. Talk to us about fish camp. I hear a lot about fish camp in Alaska, but for those of us who don't know what that is, can you describe it?
Well, In the interior, people have established places where they go to do their subsistence fishing. We're here, and families will move out when the run's on and process their fish for the winter. But here on the Kenai, we're pretty urban, and I'll probably get dinged for saying we're urban. But we have a lot. There aren't family fish camps, but what we do is. We have a tribal fish camp, and we bring children from Anchorage, which is the largest city in Alaska, and they come and they fish with us. And we also bring elders that moved from villages to Anchorage, and we bring them down, and they come and they fish with us at our net. And both the young and the elderly, the connection they make, and to hear the stories from someone from a village that has the same feeling that we do. It's one of the best things that we get to do.
It sounds pretty amazing, Sasha. And at fish camp, are you in competition with other animals for catching fish? I mean, do you have to be sort of aware of the wildlife around and whether or not maybe bears might be coming and trying to get your fish?
Well, we have just 45 miles up the road is the Russian River, confluence of the Russian and the Kenai, and that's just prime fishing, world-class fishing, and the bears know that. They've known that for millennium. And so there is some conflict there. But when we're at fish camp, the kids are making a lot of noise. We're making a lot of noise. And so the bears just go away, and they find another spot on the river or the lake to fish until we're done. So, but we're careful, yeah.
And what do you think about catch and release fishing? I mean, sometimes people, they don't eat everything that they catch, and they maybe throw it back. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm speaking personally. My uncle told me not to play with my food. And so that's how I feel about catch and release when it comes to our king salmon. We're having a diminishing run. The numbers are down. We don't know why. And so let's give them every possible chance they can to get up there. On the other hand, sportsmen, I've watched someone take a salmon and a catch and release. And he handled that so carefully and was so careful with it. And so there's a dilemma there, and there's two sides to every story. And so I try to be respectful of them. It was really amazing for me to understand, to know that sports fishermen love the resource just like we do, and that they depend on it for mental reasons and physical reasons just as we do.
Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Ronaldo in Fort Apache, Arizona, tuned in on KNNB. Hey there, Ronaldo. Go ahead.
Hey. Yeah, one of my fondest memories I have is I have a son, Luca. He's 19 now, but when he was around 3, we took him catfishing over here at Fort Apache. There's a bridge, and a lot of people fish right there for catfish, bass, trout. And we went at night, me, my nephew, and him, and he was all happy fishing, and he hooked a catfish, and you could tell it was a big fish because his pole was all bent and everything, and he was struggling with the fish. It was going up and down the stream, and we were cheering him on, come on, Luca, bring it in, and it was all like the adrenaline rush, and he was all smiling and everything. And we had a flashlight, and after about 10 minutes, the fish got tired, and he reeled it into the shore, and the fish's head, the catfish, big old head came out of the water, and we shined a light on it, and he saw it. He dropped his pole, ran to the car, locked the doors, and he would not get off the car for the rest of that night. He was scared of that fish. It was almost as big as him after we got it out of the water, but he did not want nothing to do with that fish. We sit at a mile, White River sits at a mile, and like from Salt River Canyon to the southern border, close to 2,000 Salt River Canyon, and then the highest lake sits at close to 10,000 feet, Reservation Lake. That's the highest lake in the state, so we're blessed with all these streams, and I think like close to 20 lakes, so it's a favorite pastime for a lot of people here. They probably have a lot of good fish stories.
Ronaldo, that's hilarious. So you think your son didn't know what he was actually doing until he saw the fish come out of the water?
Yeah. He thought he was going to pull out a little fish, but he pulled out a fish almost as big as him. And he has, like, some memory of it, but he wouldn't touch it or anything after we got it out. He was scared of it.
Ronaldo, I got to ask, what's your favorite way to cook catfish?
We fillet them. You know, there's a way to go about skinning them, and then we fillet it, and then we bread it either with like half. I use half cornmeal, half flour, mix it up, and deep fry them. And they're pretty good. Mm. But the wild brown trout that they catch up in the hills up here, those are my favorite eating. like German brown. They're wild, and they have Apache trout too, rainbow trout, cutthroat trout, brook trout, and it's catfish, bass, bluegills. There's a lot of different fish. And
lots
I have
of
a lot of friends that go crazy over it.
Lots of options, Ronaldo. Thanks so much for giving us a call from Fort Apache, Arizona, tuned in on KNNB. Rich, I got to ask you, you know, we catch the fish, and if we're going to keep it, we, you know, better cook it up well. What's your favorite way to cook fish?
Here up in Quinault, we have a traditional method that we use to cook our fish. What we have is what we call a blueback, which is native to our river, the Quinault. It's a sockeye. Those are really prime fish, red meat, a lot of fat. What we like to do is build a fire outside, and we have cedar sticks that we use that are split down the middle with a wire on the bottom, and you got to point it in so you can poke it in the ground. And we'll open up that cedar stick, and we'll have other little cedar, little sticks to keep your fillet open. And then we'll put our filleted blueback between the sticks and then close it and put wire on top so it holds the fish open in a butterfly position. And we'll cook our fish over the fire for about 20 minutes to 30 minutes. And as it's cooking, you can just see the fat draining out of it. It drips and drips. And a lot of the old timers, they would always comment why their hair is not gray, because they eat a lot of salmon and that oil. And so it's kind of a way we explain that to our kids. You know, this is the way to keep your hair black. Keep it from getting gray. Kind of sense of humor anyway.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. Sasha, what about you? What's your favorite way to cook fish?
My favorite way is to get a king salmon, the first king salmon, take it to an elder and fry it right there with bacon and onions for that first king fish. But, you know, I can't make it taste as good as my grandma and my aunties did. It doesn't taste the same. So, we smoke it. But that first fish of the year, that first fresh fish of the year, just fried in cast iron skillet with rice, canned peas, and tea, and you're right back.
Oh.
Right back at home.
Sasha, that sounds delicious. What about you, LaVon? What's your favorite way to cook fish?
Well, we usually do a lot of grilling inside, and then some do open fire. And pretty much all the same with cornmeal and a little bit of flour. And then some people put a lemon in there. But like I say, a lot of them out here cook them right over the grill. And then for me, I do right on the grill too. And I know a lot of friends like to do these oven bake, you know, but that's pretty much the way most everybody cooks it around here, around the shore and stuff like that. And a little bit of butter.
Sounds really good. Sasha, we're just coming up on the end of the hour, but I wanted to hear from you a little bit about teaching our young ones to fish and carrying on the tradition of fishing. Share with us a little bit about that.
Well, it's a connection, and it ties, life runs in cycles, and it's part of the cycle of life. And I don't believe the fish will come back to us if we don't teach our young to appreciate what we have. And we don't catch fish. The fish come to us. And if we can teach that to our children, to respect the resource, and that it will be there for generations, that it's a wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
I hope that I can get the Quinault guide's name because I have somebody I want to send down there.
Well, his name is Rich Underwood. And Rich, what about you? What about passing on to the next generation the culture and tradition of fishing?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Sasha, for that, for what you have said. It goes along the lines of what we do here at Quinault. And what we're doing, you know, it's not a pastime. It's not a recreation. It's something that it's a connection. It's a way of life for us tribes here on the West Coast. So we depend on that fish. We're known as salmon eating people, and there's ceremonies that goes on with that salmon, the first salmon, as Sasha referred to, and that's important to convey to our youth. And like we said, you know, it's not just a pastime. It's a way of life. It's who we are, and we need to do what we can to preserve and protect our salmon at all cost. And we're more of an advocate for preservation than we are for commercializing. But yet we understand that because there's a balance, and that balance needs to be in harmony with the salmon as well, because they have no voice, and we're that voice for salmon. So wow. I appreciate that coming from Sasha up there, up north.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for that. We really appreciate it. We have reached the end of the hour. Thanks to our guests, Sasha Lindgren, Richard Underwood, and LaVon Thomas. We're back on Monday with our May Book of the Month, Captain Paiute, Indigenous Defender of the Southwest by Theo So. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Stephen Emmons is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm senior producer Monica Brain, sitting in for our host Tara Gatewood. Have a good weekend.
Support by the 95th Santa Fe Indian Market, August 20th through the 21st, announcing an open call for contemporary Native artists to exhibit at IM Edge during Indian Market. IM Edge embraces a vision of the market as a living and breathing culture to include contemporary art forms that do not fit into the traditional Indian Market categories, including digital media. Applications for IM Edge can be found under the Exhibitors tab at santafeindianmarket.com. Deadline is July 1st.
Cliche, growing up can be hard. Paying for mental health care doesn't have to be. Insurance includes free depression screening and covers mental health and substance abuse treatment. Your family may qualify for free or low-cost coverage through Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP. Call 1-800-318-2596 or visit healthcare.gov/tribal. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Elahqua.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.